Today in our hot seat, we have Avi Stamen, founder and CEO of Academic Language Experts. Hi, Avi. Good to have you with us.
Thanks so much, Inga, Sarah. It's really a pleasure and honor to be here with you today, and I'm looking forward to our chat.
Welcome to C-Suite Hot Seat, the show where we put C-level executives from language service providers of all sizes in the hot seat. We will ask tough questions and get inspired answers. Our hosts today are Nimzi's Inga Boonen, VP of Consulting, and Sarah Hickey, VP of Research.
In one sentence, can you tell us what it is that Academic Language Experts does?
We are an LSP, but I would say an untraditional LSP in the sense that our focus is on the crossroads between the language service industry and academia, academic research, and anything really having to do with academic writing. So our services include translation, editing, formatting, grant proposals, everything having to do with helping scholars publish their research in respected academic fora.
Was that the first career that you dreamt of having as a kid, Avi?
Yeah, you know what? I really got into this as a mistake. You know, when I was a little kid, I was born and raised in the States, and I was a big baseball fan. So I always dreamed of becoming a baseball player, you know, and maybe somewhere in my mind still do. But really, the truth is that I got into this industry entirely by mistake. I was studying abroad as a bachelor's student, and I had one of my professors who I asked him if I could write my papers in English. And he agreed. And by the time the end of the semester came around, he was very impressed with my level of writing and said, I've got this article that I wrote in Hebrew. Can you translate it for me and help me publish it in English? And I said, how hard could that be? You know, and 6 months later, yeah, after breaking my teeth, I got through it and it's published. It got published with Cambridge. So, you know, all is well and good at the end. But it was much harder than I originally anticipated and sort of was my introduction to this world.
And what about when you're not working? Do you still like to spend your time then on writing and or playing baseball in the backyard? Or how do you spend your time?
My free time is spent, you know, a lot of time with my three wonderful, adorable children. But I also have taken up, really since the beginning of the pandemic, taken up mountain biking. I live right near the mountains in the desert. So every Friday morning, which is actually the off day here in Israel, we wake up quite early, get our bags packed and go out for a, you know, 30, 40 kilometer bike ride. So that's kind of how I detox and you know, clean my head for the next week.
If you were given a chance to visit three different countries, which ones would you choose and why?
Australia has always fascinated me. The people there always seem to be relaxed and not get stressed by all that much. And, you know, so I definitely think spending some time on the beach in Sydney or Melbourne would be lovely. I recently, you know, just this week was watching a really fascinating documentary about the Congo and sort of some of the exploitation, unfortunately, that happens there in the mining. So I'm not sure that would be a pleasure trip, but I think just experiencing that firsthand and seeing what I could do to help, I think that would be on my bucket list. And then last but not least, I guess I would say the Czech Republic. My grandfather was born and raised in Prague before he was forced out by the Nazis, but I know that he had fond memories from there.
What's the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
In every position and every role that you take on in a business, try and see how you can replace yourself. Figure out how to best, what are best practices in that position, and then see how can you get someone. In my case, I like trying to bring someone on who can do an even better job than I can, but really giving them the framework and instructions so you're not just throwing them in the deep end and say, go do marketing for me, but actually, here's our approach to marketing because I've done it. I've experienced, I've done trial and error, and now take this and, you know, and make it into something bigger and greater. The other thing has really been just, I guess, deep listening to clients. I'm always shocked that when I actually spend the time to ask them, tell me about your experience, tell me about how it was from your perspective, I'm always learning something which I didn't learn before. And sometimes they're easy tweaks that don't really cost that much and aren't huge investments that we can do to improve our service for our clients.
We get a lot of CEOs on this show and other C-level people, but we don't get as many founders. So I'm very curious to know what really inspired you to start your company.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think some people sort of start a business, have a vision, have a dream, find a niche in the market And then sort of say, okay, how can I address this issue? And I am, there's a sort of romantic notion that goes along with that. Like, I'm coming to solve a problem for the world. I literally came to it from the exact, I really fell into this business. And I think the love affair came afterwards, was built up as I was building and growing the business and really sort of learning and appreciating what goes into it and all the different hats that need to be worn. And understanding our mission by listening and by experiencing, I think really was what it kind of came down to. So really what drives, I would say now, if you'd ask me today, you know, what drives sort of the passion for the business, it's that we all, every single one of us, make very critical decisions about our lives, cognitively or not, based on research, right? Are we going to get the vaccine or not going to get the vaccine? Are we going to, you know, get into our car, you know, and drive and trust that it's going to get us to our place? Or maybe are we going to trust an automated, you know, a machine to drive for us? All of these questions, they're all based on research that's been done. And what I noticed and what I continue to notice is that there are certain things that sort of get in the way of the best research being published. And a big one of those things, what maybe, you know, top three would be language barriers. There's an expectation that you're going to publish your research in English. There's an expectation that you can communicate clearly. You're up against really heavy competition. 90% of articles are rejected and are not accepted for publication. And therefore, if you're not pristine in the way you express yourself and your ideas, you have a chance, there's a good chance you're not going to have your research accepted. And what happens is that all of us, as the scientific community, as people, are impoverished because we're not getting the best research out there. My mission and the company's mission and all of my employees, what we drive for is how can we help those researchers for whom English may be a second language, or Anglo researchers who are trying to publish in another language, how do we enable them and empower them to really get their research to the forefront, to the people that it needs to get to make real impact in the world?
You know, you founded your company and you kicked things off the ground. And when was kind of your first breakthrough? Do you recall a moment there?
Academia is so niche, and everyone is studying such particular things that you really need the subject expertise in order to accomplish your goal. Otherwise, it ends up with embarrassing mistakes. And sometimes the scholars themselves will get the journal coming back to them and saying, listen, this is just not ready for publication. You know, we have a reputation to uphold. We need you to improve it and fix it up. So that was kind of that aha moment where I said to myself, if I can get the best academic minds in the world, then we really have something powerful that can make a real difference.
Yeah. What would you say was your biggest failure in this whole endeavor, and what have you learned from it?
You know, looking back, I think one of my biggest mistakes was not connecting sooner. And I think that I could have avoided some of the mistakes I made had I connected better sooner with some of the, you know, industry leading professionals, whether in terms of choosing the right CRM, the right CAT tool, whether it's in terms of just best practices, workflows. So that really has been my goal over the last 2 years, is to make better connections within the language services industry so they get to know us, we get to know them, to make better connections also with the public, with the academic publishing industry, which is really kind of, in the end of the day, they're the ones who are the gatekeepers of which research is published and which is not. And also making inroads with universities so that we're really, you know, kind of trying to make an impact on the entire ecosystem of publication and not just helping individual researchers one at a time.
What does success mean to you?
There's no greater satisfaction than when you have a scholar who comes maybe with a draft that's not fully ready. We help them through the revisions, the editing, the scientific review, you know, finding the right journal, getting the reviews back and fixing up the article, and then finally getting published. That's a really rewarding feeling for the translators, for the editors, and for our whole staff.
Is there a new big challenge you're facing now? Can you tell us anything more about that?
What I call the golden balance of translation, which is on the one hand, respecting the source text and as the authoritative text. And on the flip side, creating a text in the target language that stands independently of the source text, that you don't need to reference the source text, is a continual challenge that, because every researcher's study is so unique. So, you know, I mentioned before, you know, CAT tools are brilliant, are excellent at repetitive text. But what happens in academia, everything needs to be novel. Everything needs to be new. Repetition is, right? Okay. You may go over some of the things you've done previously, but that's not going to get you published. You know, published research is only going to be something that's new and novel. And how do you find those experts who really have a deep understanding of the field? So we're constantly recruiting, we're constantly testing, vetting, trying to upgrade the quality of the translators and editors that we work with so that really everyone's working with an expert in the field. That's our goal. Our goal is always that there's a match between the best writers and the best translators and editors and the research that's relevant to it.
What advice would you give to young entrepreneurs starting their own business in the language industry today?
think for yourself. Don't sort of go with the crowd, but also be in tuned and channel, whether it's through NIMSY Insights or whether it's through other platforms mm-hmm. where important and informative conversations are going on, be plugged into that, because I think that you'll be, you know, better prepared for handling some of the challenges that come your way.
Thank you so much, Avi. Thank you for joining us in the hot seat, and I hope you didn't sweat too much.
It's getting hotter here, but it's still lovely out, so I think I'm okay.
If anyone else feels like letting off some steam and you're part of the C-suite at a company in the language services industry, sign up with us if you dare to sit in our hot seat.
And for the viewers at home, this was it for today, folks. But watch out for the next episode that will be published as a video on Multilingual TV and as a podcast on the NIMSY website. We'll see you there.